This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon. I'm a dunce. I know a few song lyrics, few baseball stats, and how to knot a tie. Left to my own devices, I confuse Doric with Corinthian, Monet, Manet, and Matisse, Cro-Magnon and Neanderthal, Socrates and Sophocles, Crete and Sicily, Grover Cleveland and William Howard Taft. Hey, the capital of Missouri, Columbia, right? Or is it Branson? My ignorance is carefully concealed on this program because I can punch four digits on the telephone in here.
Library, can we help you?
That's Key Molesky, who is the source of all human knowledge. I said that on the air once. It's all I have to know. She's NPR's longest-serving librarian. She was the inspiration for a PBS children's special. She's now written a book that harvests some of the facts that she's plucked so lovingly over the years. The book is All Facts Considered, the Essential Library of Inessential Knowledge. Key Molesky joins us in our studios. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Scooter.
Now, watermelon, fruit, or vegetable?
Yes. It's
yeah.
both. Most of us would think of it as a fruit, but it can also be considered a vegetable because it's in the same family as cucumbers and gourds. And the state legislature of Oklahoma a few years ago decided that it would be their state vegetable.
But in theory, could California decide to make it a state fruit?
Oh, absolutely.
Huh. The rocket's red glare. Where'd the red glare come from?
Well, that's Congreve rockets,
yeah.
Which was at that point in time, early 1800s, a new development in weaponry. Mm-hmm. And to get a better idea of what they are, if you've ever set off a bottle rocket in your backyard on 4th of July, that's a small version of a Congreve rocket.
We really can't stump you with anything, can we?
Well, not if it's in my book. Then I've already looked it up.
All right. Well, I think the question everybody wants to know, what's it like to work with a group of insufferable egos like you do, day in and day out?
I can't imagine who you're referring to.
I can't either, but objectively, you know.
Yeah. Well, I would say if you're
in the abstract, what's it like
to NPR hosts and reporters? I'm very happy to support them because for the most part they're very appreciative of our efforts. But I wouldn't want to be your editors.
What does that mean?
I wouldn't want to have to tell you.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, I think almost the most astonishing fact, and I hardly consider it inessential, that I encountered in your book is, you know, all of our latte swilling in this day and age to the contrary. Americans are actually drinking less coffee than we did in 1946, right?
According to the USDA, Americans in 2007 consume about 22.7 gallons, whereas in the 1940s it was more than twice that. And I think no doubt the difference is the popularity of carbonated beverages, soft drinks and the like, which were not so available earlier in the 20th century.
Yeah, we just had a couple, right?
So everybody drank coffee at every meal.
Some of us still do. I thank you to recognize. One of the last things that our friend, the late Dan Shore, wrote for publication was a blurb for your book. He said, Key Molesky enshrines the humble fact in a way that's both instructive and enchanting. Any memories?
Well, I remember the first time Dan came into the library was pretty much my very first day in the news library in 1990, and he expected to see the library manager, Rob. Rob wasn't there. He stopped short. I said, hello, can I help you? He said, no, that's okay. And he turned around and walked out. But once he realized—
I meant any warm memories.
Oh, it gets better.
Yeah.
Once he realized that I was going to be the only librarian available on Fridays and he needed information on Fridays, he did go ahead and ask me some questions and I managed to answer them adequately. And so we did become very close friends, and I'm really very proud that he read my book, that there's a fact about him in my book, and that he wrote me that blurb.
Is that the Watergate fact?
That's right. He asked me to find the phrase, follow the money, in the book, All the President's Men, by Woodward and Bernstein. And because it's Dan Shore, and my policy is to go to any length to get Dan Shore the information he needed, I went through the book page by page. And that phrase does not appear there. And then in talking to Bob Woodward and to the screenwriter, William Goldman, Dan discovered that it's actually kind of made up for the movie and it did not occur in real life. So I called that fact, he should have said it.
But people say it all the time to each other.
Well, now they do, certainly. And that's why Dan was asking. He wanted to use it in another context.
Did Van Gogh cut off his ear?
In the United States, it's okay to say Van Gogh. It's okay. What we're most used to, but it's nice of you to try.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it for anyone other than you, I assure you.
There are a couple of German scholars who recently looked at the police reports and such and think that perhaps his good friend, the painter Paul Gauguin, cut off his ear on the street in Arles when they were arguing over something. But apparently,
excuse me. If he cut off his ear, he can't be that good a friend.
Well, they were having a bad day,
but
they were friends over many, many years. But the curator of the Van Gogh Museum is skeptical, so I put it in there as just a maybe.
I think I know this, but let me double check it with you. Who was the first non-Native American to set foot in Chicago?
Well, it was actually an African man, a man from Haiti, whose name was Jean-Baptiste Pointe du Sable, and he constructed the first dwelling at a trading post at what is now known as Chicago.
Yeah, and they named a high school after him, although
nice.
We say it du Sable.
Of course.
Don't have...
In New York, we would say du Sable. Du Sable.
I will say, while we're recording this interview, that what we treasure about you here, you just don't wait for the phone to ring. You find out stuff and bring it to our attention. I mean, so many of the stories that people wind up hearing that they actually like begin with you uncovering something.
Well, in any of the librarians, we read all the time. We're constantly looking at news sources, at websites, at all kinds of things that are happening in the world. And a particular host or reporter pops into mind and say, oh, so-and-so needs to know about this. So we're all very proactive. It's really a part of the proper job of a librarian.
So sometimes on those very rare occasions when we call up the extension of the library and there's no answer, it goes into voicemail. Am I correct in assuming that there are half a dozen of you crouching below the table saying...
Oh, no, it's Scott. You pick it up. We're happy to answer any call.
You have a wonderful last section where you talk about great endings to books, including, I think, just about my favorite, which is Frank McCourt's ending to... I like The Great Gatsby, too.
That is the line that makes it the great American novel, I think.
Yeah.
It's the closing line.
Born carelessly against the past.
So we beat on, boats against the current, borne back ceaselessly into the past.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
And then you have Frank McCourt's ending from Angela's Ashes.
I stand on the deck with the wireless officer, looking at the lights of America twinkling. He says, "My God, that was a lovely night, Frank. Isn't this a great country altogether?" "Tis." All of these closing lines, which I thought was very clever of me to use that as the final fact in the book, all of them are ones that I'm so attached to, I can't even read them without choking up. Some of them I absolutely can't even read to myself without choking up.
Well, NPR's reference librarian, Kim Olesky, her new book, All Facts Considered, The Essential Library of Inessential Knowledge. Key, it's a great book. I'll say it. Tis.
Tis. Thank you so much.
And you can find out how many insects are on Earth and their names and read more of Key's favorite facts on our website, npr.org.